We're talking about barn quilts on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. They are quilt blocks painted on wooden squares, and each one tells a story. Each one is carefully crafted and to reflect the sponsor and it lasting for generations on that barn. There are now 43 states with quilt trails, including our friends over in Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan. And we're on a tour of the ones in Shawnee County, which hails itself as Wisconsin's barn quilt capital. Have you seen the quilt squares and barns in Shawnee County? What is your impression of them? What's your favorite one? We're at 800-642-1234. Jim Leuenberger is a writer and photographer. He helped start the Shawnee County Barn Quilt Project, and he wrote a book, photographed a book as well, called The Barn Quilts of Shawnee County, Wisconsin. Jim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So for those who are not familiar with barn quilts, put a picture in our mind's eye, if you will. Explain what they look like.
A barn quilt is actually a quilt block or quilt pattern painted on 2 4x8 sheets of plywood. I draw a pattern on the plywood, and then I paint the barn quilt on the boards, and then we put them up on the barn.
And you go through a lot of painter's tape, I would imagine.
Well, we started the project in 2010, and for some reason I decided to save all the tape that we have used to do the quilts. And so I have a kind of a tape sculpture in the basement at the Shawnee Chamber where I do the painting. And there are now over 30,000 feet of tape in that particular little sculpture.
Okay, wait, is that sculpture taller than you?
No, you know, it's kind of funny. You expect that it would keep getting taller, but the tape keeps settling, so it's not getting any taller, but it's certainly getting a lot heavier.
Oh, it kind of sounds like us as we age, huh?
I'm not going to comment on that.
I think we're slightly off course here. So, you know, back to these barn quilts. You know, you have more than 300 now in Shawnee County. Did you ever imagine that you would hit, you know, hundreds of them?
Not really. When I started the project in 2010, you know, people said, well, how many of these are you going to have? And I had no idea what kind of acceptance we would have. I mean, Shawnee has always been a big dairy county, so there are lots and lots of nice old historic barns in the county. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't have cows in anymore, but many of them have been restored or kept up very well. So we had an opportunity to have a lot of barn quilts, but I really didn't have an idea how many we would have. So I told people, well, I hope we can get at least 25. Well, in our first full year in 2011, we put up 96. So,
ooh, that was a busy year.
That was a busy year. Yeah, my wife and I were spending several hours a day painting quilts during that particular year.
What kind of paint do you use on these? Because these are really vibrant colors on these barn quilts.
It's just exterior paint, Pittsburgh paints. We get them from a local dealer here in town called Deerco. It's where we buy our paint. But it's exterior latex semi-gloss paint. And one of the reasons I think that they're so vibrant and colorful is because we do put three coats of each color of paint on the quilt. We prime the boards before we do the painting, but then we put three coats of each color for the particular pattern.
We're talking with Jim Leuenberger. He is a writer and photographer who has been leading the Shawnee County Barn Quilt Project. Have you seen the quilt squares on barns in Shawnee County and across Wisconsin? What is your impression of them? Which one is your favorite? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jim, I understand you were inspired by barn quilts you've seen in other states and other places. What was that inspiration from?
Well, I like, as you said, I'm a writer and a photographer as well. And when we were we've been driving around in other states and in southern Wisconsin, we saw barn quilts. So I was taking pictures of them. I mean, I enjoy taking pictures of things like that. And I don't know. I just came home one day in June of 2010 and told Irene that I was just going to see if I could get a barn quilt project going. And The way we started it is in some states, 4-H clubs have done a quilt as a club project. So I met with the Shawano County 4-H Leaders Association and explained to them what barn quilts were all about. And 10 of the 25 clubs at that time said they would like to do one. So that's what really started the project in 2010. We had three of them done by 4-H clubs in 2010. But yes, I had seen quilts, and you know, there's a lot of them in southern Wisconsin. There's a lot of quilts in Iowa, and we've been in other states where we've seen barn quilts. So they're just something that's so nice to see when you're driving around the country, and I thought it'd be something that would add to Shawano County.
And now you're painting in the basement of the Chamber of Commerce, is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They have a really nice, relatively new building, and when I approached them about the quilts, they thought this would be something that would be good for tourism, and they said, well, if unless you have someplace else to paint them, you can utilize part of our basement. And so that has really been great, because at one point we were painting 5 quilts at a time, so we needed a lot of space. We needed a place that was nice and cool in the summer and warm in the winter and dry and clean and bright and all that. And so they let me come to there anytime I want, and I can work on quilts. And that's been a really big help for the project.
It's like in your artist studio.
Yes, exactly. It's my home away from home.
What does your wife, Irene, think of all of this? That's what I want to know.
Well, when we first started, when I came up with it, I said, she said, well, who's going to paint these? And I said, well, we are. And she said, well, who's we? Well, it turned out that the we is her and me. So we've painted probably we have 352 quilts up. We're going to actually put up 2 more this morning. But we've painted probably out of the 350-some, we've probably painted 325 of them. So, we've spent a lot of time there, but it's been a lot of fun.
Well, if you could take us through the artistic part of the process, how are the squares designed? How do you come up with a pattern?
If people don't have an idea of what they want for a quilt block pattern, I do have a book, believe it or not, that has 5,000 patterns in it. Not specifically for barn quilts, but just quilt blocks. And so when somebody wants a quilt, I have them meet me at the chamber so they can see where I do the painting. And then I've picked out of those 5,000, I don't expect them to go through 5,000 patterns. They would go crazy. But so I picked out, I don't know, anywhere from 20 to 50 patterns that I know would look nice and would be colorful and relatively easy to lay out the pattern. And so we start going through them, and then usually they find one they like, and then from there I lay out the pattern on the plywood and get it taped off and then start the painting. So my biggest thing that I had to learn was that, you know, I'm starting with like a 2-inch square quilt block image, and I had to figure out how to, in proportion, turn that into an 8-foot square. So my math skills have gotten a lot better, I'll tell you that.
We are on a tour of barn quilts with Jim Leuenberger as our guide. He leads the Shawano County Barn Quilt Project. There are hundreds of barn quilts on display in the county. Do you have a barn quilt on display on your barn? Tell us its story and how you went about the design of the pattern. Have you been on a scavenger hunt to find each barn quilt square? Tell us about your progress. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute. More Wisconsin Weekend ahead here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're on a barn quilt tour on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are now 20 counties here in Wisconsin that have barn quilts on display. These are the vibrant quilt-style designs painted on an 8x8 piece of plywood. And Shawano County has hundreds of them dotting the countryside. Do you have a barn quilt near you? Do they add something to your autumn drives? Would you like to add a painted quilt square to your barn or get involved in the project? What questions do you have? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Perhaps you have been thinking about putting a barn quilt on your barn, on your farm. What was that project like, and what was the process like of designing your barn quilt? Join in at 800-642-1234. We've been talking with Jim Leuenberger. He helped start the Shawano County Barn Quilt Project, and he also wrote a book on barn quilts of Shawano County, and that book came out in 2015. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Can you tell us about your book that you did on barn quilts?
The book I put together is a book that has a picture of each of the barn quilts that we have in Shawano County, along with the name of the sponsor, where the quilt is located, a little history of the farm, and maybe why they picked the particular quilt pattern they did. And it also has a map that shows where all of the quilts are located. So people can get a book at the Shawano Chamber, or they can also buy it on eBay, as a matter of fact. And then they can drive around Shawano County and take a look at the quilts.
What are some of the more compelling stories that have stuck out to you through the decade, a story of behind a barn quilt that is so meaningful to you?
Every quilt that we've done has a story, and it's really amazing that the people I've met, first of all, because of the quilts. But one that really hit home to me was we had put up a quilt between Bondiwell and Green Bay, and I had the what I usually do is I when we put the quilt up, I take a picture of the people with the quilt on the barn. And this particular quilt had been sponsored by a credit union, so some of the board members from the credit union were there to see the quilt go up and to have their picture taken. And so we had it all done, and I got the information I needed. And so we were driving away, and the car in front of me all of a sudden stopped just on right near the farm. And the gentleman in the car got out of the car, and he walked back to my car. And I rolled down the window, and I said, yes. And he said, well, I just wanted to let you know how much these barn quilts of yours mean to people. And I said, well, that's great, but what exactly do you mean? And he said, well, I lost my wife about 3 weeks ago, and one of the last things she wanted me to do for her before she died was to drive around and look at the barn quilts.
Oh, I mean, wow.
A story like that, why wouldn't I want to keep doing them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. And there are other stories like that. It's amazing what a lot of these quilts have meant to people.
It sounds as if, too, that you'll need to be adding on to your book based on the pace you put these barn quilts up.
Well, my first printing of the book was 5,000, and we're almost out of them. So, yes, sometime next year I'm going to update the book, and by then we'll probably have, well, I know we're going to have 360 quilts in Shawano County by the end of the year. And so whatever number we're at sometime in the middle of next year, I'll update the book, you bet.
We're talking with Jim Leuenberger, who is behind over 300 barn quilts in Shawano County, and we're exploring the origin story of barn quilts in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jim, you've probably traversed every single road in Shawano County by this point.
Yes, we've been on roads that we were never on before, but that brings up a good point. One of the things I wanted to do from the start of this project is to get people out on the back roads. Shawano County is a beautiful county. It's 900 square miles, and there's beautiful colors in the fall. There's lots of maple trees, so we have beautiful colors in the fall. Even the winters are pretty, if you can believe that. But we wanted to get a lot of the quilts on the back roads for that particular reason. We wanted them to enjoy the beauty of Shawano County. Of course, we did put some on the main roads, like Highway 29, just to get exposure, and so people could see them and maybe stop at the chamber and find out what they're all about. But yeah, we want people to get on their bikes or their motorcycles or their cars or whatever, just to drive around and look at the beauty of Shawnee County, and hopefully the quilts have added to that.
Jim, how has this project brought Shawnee County closer together as a community?
It's been amazing, the support we've had from the community throughout the whole county. We've had a lot of other or a lot of businesses sponsor quilts. Most of the quilts are sponsored by the barn owners themselves, but there are a lot of businesses, financial institutions, those kinds of things who have sponsored a quilt. Many individuals have sponsored quilts. We've had people from other parts of the state who don't even live in Shawnee County sponsor a quilt. They come up here for vacation or whatever, or they might have a cabin on a lake, and they like the quilt so much they've wanted to sponsor them. So the support of the community has been amazing. And another thing, aspect of our project that is so neat, is that I do write an article about the project or about the individual quilt, putting some information about the history of the farm, why they chose the particular quilt pattern. And again, I get a picture of the people with their quilt. And our local newspaper has printed every single one of those articles.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So we really have a nice history of all these farms that have barn quilts.
Let's go to Cheryl now, joining us from Watertown. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Great. What about barn quilts?
Well, I've never heard of barn quilts, Jim, until right now, and I'm driving, but
really?
I do have pretty good reception. Yeah, and I'm intrigued with what you're doing because we purchased a property. I'm not in Shawnee County. We're in Jefferson County, and I really purchased it because I fell in love with the barn. It's a large old barn, and I want to keep it restored. I love the barn. We have a little Cream City farmhouse on that property, but I would love to consider a barn quilt on our barn.
Cheryl, you totally need a barn quilt. Jim, how does she do this?
I are there other barn quilts in Shawnee or in Jefferson County?
Not that I know of, Jim. But again, we just moved there within the last year, and so
okay.
I haven't explored as much as I would like to. However, we are on a county road that's pretty well traveled. A lot of bicyclists, motorcyclists, because it is a beautiful county road.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to share that with people that drive by our barn.
Cheryl, that is awesome. And Jim, we're short on time, but what would be your best tip for people like Cheryl who might want a barn quilt on their barn?
I actually put together a set of guidelines on how to do a barn quilt. And if somebody outside of Shawnee County would like to do one, they're not that hard to do. They could contact the Shawnee Chamber and get emailed a set of these guidelines to do a quilt.
Perfect. Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Jim Leuenberger helped start the Shawnee County Barn Quilt Project that is going strong for the past decade, and his 2015 book is called The Barn Quilts of Shawnee County, Wisconsin. Coming up, we look at how to use Wisconsin's best fall produce in cooking. What are some of your favorite fall veggies, and what's the best way to prepare them? Do you preserve or can your fruit and vegetables? Join in with fall cooking ideas at 800-642-1234. There's more Wisconsin Weekend after this news here on the Ideas Network. We're headed into the kitchen and cooking with the fall harvest on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What's a fall vegetable you've recently tried that inspired your recipes? How do you use root vegetables? What about cranberries? We're at 800-642-1234. James Shend is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine in Milwaukee, and he joins us from our Milwaukee studios. James, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you have a recipe that makes use of something we know here a little bit in Wisconsin, and that is cranberries. Tell us about your cranberry wild rice pilaf.
What I love about this dish is it's a little bit unexpected. Most people know that Wisconsin is the top grower of cranberries in the country. We do produce a fair amount of wild rice as well as our neighbors in Minnesota. And so this is a great way to combine both of those dishes. It's a great fall dish to have, but it's also really elegant enough that you can put it on your Thanksgiving or holiday table, and it just fits right in. Real easy to make. It's only about 7 ingredients, so it's something you can put together really, really fast.
But wild rice can be tricky.
It can be. You just have to cook it low and slow and very gentle, and it usually turns out really, really well. You just need that time. It's nothing that you're going to do really quickly. So you just have to plan for it. Like, this bakes in the oven for about an hour, and so you just have to plan accordingly.
When do the cranberries go in?
Cranberries go in right at the beginning. And so we just toss everything in, pour it into a baking dish, and then just the cranberries go in right at the end.
I take it back.
I am corrected. It's a little early in the morning.
That's okay. And so you actually end up baking this pilaf in the oven. Is that more like finishing it off?
Yeah, so it's the last step you're going to do. You're going to add cranberries and almonds to it just before you serve it. And so the cranberries don't need a whole lot of time to heat up. We're using dried cranberries in this particular dish, but there's a lot of great things you can do with fresh cranberries.
We're looking at recipes here, and this one is for the cranberry pilaf, which is at WPR.org/mornings. James, what produce do we have here in Wisconsin that we should really make use of as the temperatures cool off?
Well, the fall is the great time of year for a lot of the harder squashes, so things like butternut squash, acorn squash. They're all coming into season, and they're the ones that you should be looking for. You're going to start to see tomatoes dwindling really quickly now, but you can still get some good ones. And the zucchinis and stuff, they're probably all gone. So we're going to be looking at a lot of the squashes, a lot of produce like apples, pears, that are common right about now. So those are the ones that you should be seeking out, and they're the absolute freshest and best tasting you can look for.
What do you like to do with your squash?
Pretty much anything. The simplest technique that I like to do is just peel a butternut squash, slice it up, and then just toss it with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, and roast it. And it's as simple as that. And it just takes a couple of minutes to do, so maybe about 30 minutes in the oven to get tender, depending on how thin you slice it.
Well, let's take a call. Chris is joining us from Adams. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I have this fabulous recipe. The first thing you do is you make a cranberry relish, and this is based pretty much on Susan Stamberg's that she puts on the air every year. They make her come back to put this on the air. But it's basically you saute some garlic and onions in the bottom of a pan, and then you throw in a can of frozen condensed pineapple orange juice. And then put in a bag of fresh cranberries. And then when that's all cooked up, you throw in like a handful of fresh ginger and a handful of horseradish. And I like to put in as much horseradish as I can tolerate. And you can jar this up and keep it you can either can it or you can put it in your freezer for the winter. But the recipe is, you saute some more onions and garlic in the bottom of a pan, and then you put in about 2 cups of dry sherry and a bunch of wild rice. And then you make a trivet. You quarter an onion and put it in there, and you slice some sweet potatoes, like really thick, and put those in. And then you put chicken on top of that, whatever you want to use. I usually use thighs, but you can do that skin side up. And you put that in the oven and bake it at like 325 until the chicken is done. And then when that's all done, you put the cranberry relish on top of it, stick it under the broiler,
so
and caramelize it a little bit. You got to watch it at this point because it'll burn. But you caramelize it a little bit, and it's absolutely delicious.
Oh, Chris,
that sounds
absolutely amazing. And she's using like everything from the fall harvest. I mean,
exactly.
I'm just ticking it off my list here. Chris, thank you so much. James, what do you love to use ginger for? Where do you use ginger in your cooking?
Oh, just about anywhere. I mean, that's one of those ingredients that straddles everything from desserts to appetizers and anything in between. It's you see it commonly in a lot of desserts like gingerbread and things like that this time of year. But it's great in like stews and chilies and chutneys. And it's great fresh, dried, powdered, you name it. It's a wonderful ingredient. I like to use it. A little bit of it goes a really long way. And like the easiest, simplest thing you can do is just slice just one or two slices from it and drop it in a glass of hot water. I mean, very simple for a quick tea. But you can also put it into oatmeal, which I do pretty much every morning, fresh or dried. And it's just one of those great ingredients that goes with almost absolutely everything.
So along with your ginger in your oatmeal, I have to ask, what else is in that oatmeal?
So well, this time of year, I'm usually tossing in some cranberries because you can find those fresh cranberries now, and I'll cook them up with the oatmeal because I usually do the Irish oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does take a little bit longer to cook. So about halfway through, I'll toss in about a handful of fresh cranberries, and they'll have enough time to cook and almost pop and explode a little bit. And so it flavors the whole thing. A little bit of fresh ginger, maybe a touch of cinnamon if you got it. So that's one of those things. And always some toasted nuts, usually pecans.
And does your oatmeal keep? What do you do with the leftovers?
Oh, so I usually make a big batch like on the Sunday, and then I'll put it all into one container, bring it to work, and then I'll be eating from that, just microwave it for about a minute or so, and it holds beautifully.
And then you have food for the whole week.
Exactly.
James Shund is with us. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. It's based out of Milwaukee. Where do you go to find quality vegetables here in Wisconsin? Where do you find the freshest stuff? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Sarah now, joining us from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to mention the noble turnip because I like turnips a lot, and I discovered this recipe in a Jacques Pepin cookbook and for sweet potato soup, and it had turnips also, and you couldn't even really notice that there were turnips in it, but it just made the soup a lot more interesting, and I think there was like chicken broth and shallots and
but turnips were in there, but in slightly disguised. Sarah?
I don't know if you'd say disguise, but they were just, when you ate it, you didn't think, oh, turnip soup.
You didn't think of turnip soup. James, she calls it the noble turnip.
The noble, I love that term. To me, the turnip, the rutabaga, the parsnip, those are all those what I would call noble or grandma heirloom vegetables. They're awesome vegetables that a lot of people just kind of discount. They're not the real popular ones, and to me, those are the ones that you should be seeking out. What I found fascinating last year is I went to a number of restaurants in Milwaukee and Madison and kind of across the country and was kept seeing parsnips. Parsnips were everywhere, and a lot of people were doing very, very interesting things. One of the ones that I saw that was very intriguing was a tempura battered and then fried parsnip. And I'm like, this is a great way to elevate what those more mild vegetables are, and something that you can pick up pretty inexpensively. And as Sarah mentioned, the turnip kind of is one of those background flavors. You don't really notice it a lot. It's great to kind of mix into like mashed potatoes. So just dice them up with your regular potatoes, put them in the simmering water, and then mash it all up. And you don't really even know that they're there, but you're hiding in one of those vegetables.
And you're hiding also in some, some extra nutrients as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So where do you go to find all of your fresh fall produce? Where do you like to find it?
Right now, it's everywhere. That's what I love about this. There's a lot of great farmers markets still going on, and so you can find those. I just did a quick search, and I'm finding great farmers markets everywhere from Rhinelander down to Kenosha. So there's a lot of places you can go right around where I'm down in Kenosha right now, but there's a lot of orchards that are popping up, and not popping up, they're established, but they have produce stands now in them. And so you can go and have the fun and go to the corn maze and do the apple picking and things. But they also are providing a lot of fresh produce this time of year. So those are great places to go. So just keep checking your local areas.
So when you pick out produce, do you look at the size? How do you evaluate the quality of it?
So I'm one of these people that tends to gravitate towards the imperfect or ugly produce, just because I know that it's still a good quality piece of fruit or vegetable, and it doesn't usually cost as much. And it's like if you go to a grocery store, they usually push those off to a side, or a farmer's market, you can kind of get the dented, dinged kind of discount on those, but they're still really good, high quality products, and you're not looking for those beautiful, the perfect magazine quality looking of an apple.
We're in the kitchen preparing dishes inspired from the fall harvest with Taste of Home deputy editor John Shend. He's our guide. Maybe you've connected with a farm through a CSA and you have a box of winter squash and beets, potatoes, leeks that you want to know what to do with. Join in for your recipe ideas, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're in the kitchen for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And as the days get shorter, we're getting some recipe ideas for meals with our fall harvest produce all around us. Classic way to prepare root vegetables is to roast them in the oven with olive oil and salt. But you might have better ideas for beets and onions. Let's talk about your favorite recipe ideas. 800-642-1234. James Shen stays with us. He's deputy editor at Taste of Home. Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Cascade, Iowa. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What are you doing with your cherries, may I ask?
Well, my wife and I enjoy planting various things, and we do it mostly by, oh, that plant looks neat. So we saw this ground cherry plant, and we thought, well, that's cool. So we planted that, and we have all these ground cherries, and I have no clue what to do with them. And I opened up one of the fruits, and I looked at it, and it didn't look like much to me. I tossed it on the ground, and our chickens pecked it, and they walked away. So I'm like, well, that's, I don't know if that's a clue or something, that these things are edible.
James, what'd you do with those ground cherries?
Oh, I mean, they're fascinating. I love just eating them. I mean, it's something that it's one of those things you don't normally see. So it's something that you're going to have to find either growing wild or you intentionally plant, because it is cool looking. And honestly, I have not done a whole lot with them. I've had them a couple of times just fresh. You can puree them. One of the things that popped to mind immediately was like a salsa. Just make like a fruit salsa, just chop them up and things like that. I've seen them in pies, and try them with an appetizer, like a goat cheese, just sliced fresh, or you could even do a quick pickle. So just take out the seeds, chop them up very coarsely in big chunks is what I kind of like to do, and then heat up like a sweeter vinegar, like a red wine vinegar or even a champagne vinegar, maybe a little bit of spice in there, like cinnamon or cloves, even a pumpkin pie spice, and then just quickly pour it over the cherries, and then just let it sit for about 10 minutes, and you're good to go. And then just match it up with like a nice fresh Wisconsin goat cheese or nice cheddar.
Dan, how does that sound?
Awesome. That sounds great. Right up my alley. I like simple things like that.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for calling in.
Produce.
Yeah, and James, you know, let's look at Brussels sprouts here for a moment. You know, I usually just go with putting them with some olive oil and kosher salt. But what can we do with your Brussels sprout recipe?
I love Brussels sprouts. This is one of those vegetables that we never had growing up as a kid because my mother hated them. So we never actually saw them. And so when I first discovered them, I was like 22. And I'm like, this is a fascinating vegetable. And one of the things that I really, really love to do is just take them, cut them in half, and then shred them. So you just chop them really, really finely. And then I'll throw them into a hot wok or a cast iron skillet that has no oil in it whatsoever, just a dry skillet, and then cook them for a couple of minutes. And I'm looking to get a little bit of a char on there. And then I'll add some olive oil or sesame oil, salt, pepper, garlic, whatever you really want to throw in there is great. Even dried cranberries or fresh cranberries if you want. And it's a very quick dish. It comes together in about 5 minutes. And it's so, so good.
We have a recipe for your shredded ginger Brussels sprouts as well on our page. You know, it sounds like a little bit as you experiment that you're able to kind of come up with a different taste each time you try these recipes with fall vegetables.
Exactly. And I mean, that's what I love about that Brussels sprout recipe is I don't make it the same way twice. When I put it in the magazine a couple of years ago, I'm like, I actually had to write something down and put it in there. And so we ended up with the ginger. And but I do that every conceivable way. There's nuts that go in it sometimes. Sometimes I'll add in some shredded like butternut squash. It's a very versatile thing.
And putting it in a dry skillet, too, you know, that's kind of different as well. Nothing is weighing it down.
Exactly. It's a classic Asian cooking technique. You want to kind of get a little bit of a char first. And as long as you keep stirring it, you're good to go. And then the oil is actually going to be a flavor carrier. It's not going to help it's not stick to the pan, but it's going to be more for the flavor.
Well, James, this has been fun. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
James Shend is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, and he joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. And we have recipes for the cranberry wild rice pilaf and that shredded gingered Brussels sprouts that I want to try tonight. Other recipes as well at WPR.org/mornings. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Andrea Anderson with a remembrance of a friend and her love of pizza farms.
Years ago, my dear friend and former colleague, Brianne Chasso, started getting really excited about pizza farms. Since she grew up on a dairy farm, the concept combined two of her many loves, pizza and agriculture. Tragically, Bri passed away earlier this month from a rare form of cancer. I never got to go to a pizza farm with her, but I'm so happy she created a Wisconsin Life story about them. We wanted to share this story to honor her work and share her joy.
When I told people I was going to a pizza farm, I kept getting the same question over and over. What is a pizza farm? So I posed that question to Pam Taylor, owner of the Nelson Stone Barn in Nelson.
A pizza farm has a lot of different connotations. Ours here, we grow our own herbs and custom make our own pizzas. So we're a little bit different than growing your own vegetables, but we try to stay as local as possible. There are some that grow their own vegetables and then go farm to table.
Taylor doesn't start serving until 5 p.m. on Saturdays, but sometimes people show up early. On the day I visited, more than 20 cars and motorcycles stretched in a line along the road. By 5:30, around 60 pizza orders had been placed. The record number of pizzas in a night is 226, set earlier this year. Inside, staff take orders, prepare dough, and sauce and top pizzas. After the bubbling pies are pulled from the oven, they're quickly sliced and delivered to customers.
You guys 18?
Yep.
The Hawaiian? Clearly, the pizza is popular, but the scenery doesn't hurt either. Golden barn walls house a seating area and herb gardens. Again, Pam Taylor.
We're mostly here just so people can come and enjoy, get a little taste of nature with your dinner. We're not a formal restaurant where you have to sit down and watch your kids. As you can see, the kids are running all over. It's a very comfortable, relaxed atmosphere. That's what I wanted.
Sometimes it feels like I'm dancing. Yeah,
that's Heather Seacrest of Suncrest Gardens Farm in Cochrane. I try to stay out of the way as she maneuvers a pizza in her wood-fired oven with a peel on a pizza night. Seacrest bakes the pizzas in a fire brick domed oven that looks kind of like an igloo, a very warm, tan igloo. Usually, Seacrest starts firing the oven by 11 a.m.
It was at probably 400 when we started the day, and this, when it all turns white in the inside of the oven, it's at 900 degrees and the floor is at 700 then. And so that's what we aim to cook at, is around 700, 750.
Like other pizza farms, pizza nights are only one part of Suncrest Gardens Farm. Seacrest and staff tend crops, care for animals, and prepare food shares for a community-supported agriculture program. They're busy, but Seacrest says all of the pieces of the farm fit together.
And even the ash from our oven goes back to the garden, you know, as to help with the fertilizer, you know, plan of the garden, you know, back there. So nothing, everything has its purpose and everything's used, and we've even mulched tomatoes with pizza boxes. Everything's full circle as much as we can.
The pizzas I tried were unbelievably fresh. But my favorite ingredient was something that came extra with each pie. Passion. Everyone I met is passionate about knowing where their food comes from and about using the freshest possible ingredients. Mingled with that is a connection to nature and to the farm. A trip to a pizza farm isn't just about going to grab a pizza. It's an experience and a relationship with food that's hard to get in our daily lives. That's what keeps bringing people, and me, back for more. That was Brianne Chasseau telling us about the rise of pizza farms in Wisconsin. Bree formerly worked at WPR and tragically died from cancer earlier this month. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Andrea Anderson.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.